Right, this is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. I want to tell you right now, we're very excited. You may hear thunder and lightning in the background. We haven't had rain for at least 2 or 3 weeks. We're burning up here in Arkansas, and this is the first rain, and it's come in, and there's a lot of lightning and thunder, and I just hope it stays long enough to get the ground saturated. So I don't think it'll interfere with the program, but I'm very glad to see it. So you may hear some crashing and booming anyway. All right, before we start, I want to give out the toll-free number. The number is 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. And that number is toll-free all over the world. So anybody can call in that wants to do it. Okay, I've got a very interesting guest tonight, Dr. Haynes Ely, and he is a medical doctor out in California, and I'm going to be letting him tell you all about himself and everything, but the main reason I wanted him to come on is because he has a very close association with John of God in Brazil, and I know most of you know who he is, but we're going to have Haynes explain all of it, and we're going to talk about this famous, I guess he's called the psychic surgeon tonight. Okay, Haynes, are you there, aren't you?
I'm here. Nice to hear your voice, Laura.
You're not having the heat up there, are you?
Well, we had 105-degree weather last week, but it's cooled off considerably. We don't have the humidity you have, and we don't ever get rain here.
Never?
Well, not until the rainy season. All summer long, we don't see rain.
Well, thinking you're in Grass Valley, that's around where the mountains are and the pine trees.
Oh, yeah. We're up in God's country, but it still doesn't rain much here.
Well, I know they're burning up down around L.A.
Indeed.
So I figured you were further north than that.
Oh, we're way far north. We're up near Lake Tahoe. You've been here.
Well, it's breaking records for how many days it's been over 100 degrees here.
Well, I'm not sure if that's global warming or just another hot summer.
Well, I don't know. I keep thinking it could be global warming because it's this whole weather pattern here has been extremely strange. We started getting hot in April, which is very unusual. And, you know, you've heard what's happening in St. Louis and New York and everywhere.
I'm glad I'm in none of those places right now.
Yeah, so that's why we've been burning up. So today, it looks like right now we're going to get some rain. Then they said it's going to go back up to 100 as soon as it's over. So,
ouch.
Oh, well, we'll be complaining about the winter next when after a few months anyway. But, Haynes, I want him to tell you about yourself first before we get into John of God.
Well, as you know, I have a radio show that's on every Monday at noon called Earth Mysteries, and you've been my guest on my show, so I feel honored that you'd ask me to be a guest on your show.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up, that you do have your own show.
Yeah, and I'm a private practitioner. I'm a dermatologist. I'm also a clinical professor of dermatology at UC Davis, and I just live a fairly normal life.
Now, I know you. You don't live a normal life.
Well, you know, normal by your listeners' standards. I live a normal life. I go to work 9 to 5 every day.
You have two lives, just like I do.
Right. I have 4 kids, and I like to travel, and I like to talk to people on the radio.
So when you're not being a doctor, you're also on the radio.
Right.
But you do travel to Brazil a lot.
Travel to Brazil quite a lot, 23 times so far. And my wife, Catalina, is there right now. I just got an email from her.
Yeah, I think you told me that you even built a house down there.
We built a house right next door to John of God. So our property touches his casa.
And that was mainly so you could work with him?
Yeah, so we could be nearby. We asked him where we should build, and he said, right here. And he picked a spot for us.
Okay, why don't you tell the listeners about John of God? There may be some out there who don't know who we're talking about.
How long do we have?
An hour. But, you know, I like to go in steps.
Yeah, well, John of God's a Brazilian guy who has no formal education. He went to school till the second grade, dropped out because of poverty, was basically employed or learned the trade of a tailor from his father, was traveling from one town to another looking for work as a tailor, got a job, got fired the same day, ended up on the street starving. He was about 16 years old at the time. Walked into a church and to look for food or shelter, and it turned out he went into a trance and woke up 3 or 4 hours later with no memory at all of what had happened, and he had healed hundreds of people. And so the priest was very excited, told him what he'd done, asked him to come back the next day. He came back the next day, and there were, you know, 1,000 people waiting for him.
Again, so while he was in the church, these people just came in?
Yeah. Well, I guess it was a church service. You know, it's a little hazy on exactly how this all happened. This is an apocryphal story.
So he didn't know if he was so young. Like, they never had it happen before then.
No, he didn't have it happen before, and he had no idea at all what had happened. He went into a trance. And he was a trance healer. Had no recollection at all afterwards of what had happened.
Mm-hmm. And but then they had him come back the next day.
They had him come back, and he actually, you know, became wildly popular almost instantly because he healed everybody that came to him. And he traveled around Brazil, went to see other healers like Arrigo, who was a very famous healer that a book was written about called A Surgeon with a Rusty Knife.
Oh, yes, I've heard of that.
Yeah, he went to work with Arrigo for a while to help stabilize his powers and, you know, learn from the famous healer how to do things. And he spent time in northern Brazil quite a few years, again, you know, going around doing healings and learning from other healers. But just about everywhere he went, he got beat up or jailed because the local doctors and powers that be, you know, didn't like him healing. So he's sort of.
Do you think they thought he was working with the devil, or he just didn't like?
Working with the devil, yeah. The Jesuits actually ticket his casa. They say that he's doing miracles that only Jesus can do, and so therefore he must be the devil.
Oh, okay. So I thought maybe they just didn't want the competition either.
Who knows? But he's had a very persecuted life where he's, been persecuted for his healing abilities. And he actually worked as a tailor for the military in Brasilia for a while,
uh-huh.
as well as doing his healing on the side. And so he made lots of friends with military officials and government officials. So he has some protection from them. He's also healed a lot of government officials. Like, one of the people I met there was the former Supreme Court, head of the Supreme Court of Brazil, who had been healed by him.
Uh-huh.
And so he's healed enough politicians and powerful people that he has some powerful allies. But he also gets attacked all the time by the local police and the medical associations and just various people who want to, attack him for one reason or other, take away his ability to heal. So he's kind of sensitive about that kind of stuff, obviously.
You think that's strange, you know, that by now he's been doing it so long that he would have been accepted.
Well, I think the more good you do or the more famous you get, the more jealousy you get, too.
Yeah, I guess that's true, you know. But I would think, I know people come from all over the world, but I would have thought he would be accepted by his own people.
He's accepted very much by Brazilians, but there are still people in the government and stuff who, you know,
Church, are they against him?
Well, his place, his healing place, is called the Casa Dominacio.
Yeah.
It's very, very Catholic and very officially religious. I mean, all the things that are done there were begun with saying the Lord's Prayer and Hail Marys, and the healing that John of God does, he says, is done by God, not by him. He has no recollection of it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very religious kind of atmosphere. Everybody's wearing rosaries and saying prayers.
So the church shouldn't be the ones that are against
very Catholic.
Them.
Well, like I said, the Jesuits pick at the place. The Jesuits say he's doing miracles that only Jesus could do, so therefore he must be the devil.
But, you know, we even in the Bible, Jesus said you can do this and more.
Oh, yeah.
But it's always, to me, it shows ignorance. But they do have a lot of that all over the world, and, you know, when people get to those points.
Well, I think a lot of times people come home healed that their doctors told them go home and die.
Yeah.
And the person goes back to the doctor and goes, nah, 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 this guy healed me and you said I was going to die. And I think, you know, that stirs up a lot of jealousy and, you know, bad feelings.
I can understand that. Because I get clients like that. They come in and say, the doctor said I've got 6 months to live. And they said they told the doctor, I don't think so. I've got things I want to do.
Right.
So, you know, we know it. The mindset has got a lot to do with it.
Right. Well, there was a very famous psychic, probably the most famous psychic in Brazil, named Chico Xavier. And Chico told Zhao, when Zhao was fairly young in his healing career, to go to this town where he is now, called Abadjania, and set up a healing center. And a man from Abadjania Vela, the old town of Abadjania, gave Zhao, I think, about 1,000 acres, quite a lot of land.
Mm.
But it was in nowhere. I mean, literally nowhere.
Out in the middle of the jungle or what?
Yeah, middle of nowhere. It's about 90 miles west of Brasilia. But Brasilia was built in 1964. So Brasilia is a new city. And Brasilia was built in nowhere. You know, nobody wanted to go there because it was so far away from anything.
Yeah.
So the town where Zhao set up his healing center was literally nowhere. I mean, there's just a little road going to it. Now there's a state highway that goes across Brazil that goes right through the town. But it's
I wonder if they made it go that way on purpose.
Yeah, it's still kind of a nowhere town.
Yeah, but because he was getting people coming, I wonder if that's why they steered the highway over that way or something.
No, I think it was just coincidence. You know, the highway went through this. Even the town today is just a truck stop. You wouldn't even know it's a town. You'd blink and you'd be through it.
You have to know where to go anyway.
Oh, yeah. It's easy to get to, but you have to know where to go.
Yeah, otherwise there's no sign out there or anything.
There's a sign saying Abadjania, and that's it. You blink
yeah.
past it.
Okay. But that's probably where the man gave him the land, because he figured nothing would ever be done there.
Yeah, it was worthless land when he gave it to him.
It was so far from anything. Hmm.
But now people come from all over the world. You get, you know, people from, a lot of people from Europe, France, Germany, England, a lot of people from Australia, New Zealand. You know, it's really a world community now.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you come in contact with him?
Well, it's a long story, but I'll try and shorten it.
We have time.
Yeah, no, a local friend told me about this guy in Brazil and showed me some pictures and stuff of the healing. And I sort of let it go. And then a guy that lives right behind me, who's an internist, a doctor, got in a motorcycle wreck, and he hurt his back. He broke a couple of vertebrae, and he was really in bad shape. He could hardly walk, and he went down with this other friend of mine from here to see John of God, and John said, you're too weak to have surgery or any healing. You have to take some herbs and do some meditation and come back in 3 months. So he sent him home, basically.
Uh-huh.
But when that guy went down, we gave him a picture of ourselves. My wife and I gave him a picture of ourselves, because he does healing on pictures sometimes if he can't come in person.
Well, he can do it by distance then.
Yeah, by distance. So
does he have to have a picture to do it by distance?
He likes a picture, yeah.
He give you some kind of visual, I guess.
Yeah, so my yeah. wife was driving home from Sacramento, and she got the shakes and got all kinds of altered mental states, and she didn't know why. She was very, you know, thought, what's happening to me? And it turned out that at the moment she was having this feeling, the guy was giving our picture to Zhao.
Oh.
So obviously some connection was made there. So the guy comes back from Brazil the first time, and he's told to take herbs and meditate and then go back later. The second time he goes back, I'm taking care of his house for him, and he has a pond with an old dock, and I tore apart the dock to make a bridge over a creek, and it was, you know, pretty rough, hilly country. And I'm doing this for the guy because I figure he can't do anything. He's so crippled up from his motorcycle wreck.
Yeah.
2 weeks later, I'm standing there with a bag of cement trying to make a pier for the dock, and I look up, and here's Peter, my friend. He's walking down the hill with a 100-pound bag of cement over his shoulder. And, you know, 2 weeks when he left, 2 weeks before, he couldn't walk 10 feet because his back was all broken up. So I said, Peter, what happened? He says, well, he healed me. So that kind of turned the corner for me. I had heard about this guy, but I'd never actually seen anybody healed. And after seeing my neighbors carrying cement that couldn't walk 2 weeks before, I thought, well, there's something to it.
Well, had he been back to see him, or was it just the herbs?
This was his second trip. The first time this guy went to see John, John said, you're too weak to be healed. You need to build up your energy. And he sent him home.
Yeah.
And the second time he went, after taking the herbs and doing the exercises, John healed him.
That's when it happened then.
Yeah. And that happens, you know, sometimes people will go to see him and he'll tell them, you know, I can't heal you, period. Or he'll say you need to take herbs or do some meditation or something, and it'll take time, you know, come back in 6 months or something. So
it's not instantaneous with everybody.
It's not instantaneous for most people. Most people take a little work.
Do you think it's because they have something of their own they have to work on?
I think so. I think it's their own energy and their own karma and their own whatever causes the illness. I saw one woman years ago who I actually sat across from at lunch one time. She was paralyzed on one side. It was a Brazilian woman who had had a stroke, and she couldn't eat. Her arm was paralyzed. She was half her face was paralyzed. She was drooling. And during one of the sessions, the people sit in the room with John, and he has everybody close their eyes.
Yeah.
And he said, "Doctor, open your eyes." So I opened my eyes. And there was another doctor with me, so I nudged him and told him, "Hey, open your eyes." And he had this woman walking around the room, writing with her crippled hand, writing notes, messages. He had her walk around the room and open bottles of water and pour the water into cups for people. He had her pick up her wheelchair and walk it across the room and push it out the door. He had her lean down and touch her toes. He had her do all kinds of things which were totally physically impossible for her before she'd gone in that afternoon. I mean, she was literally paralyzed and had been paralyzed so that her right hand was all withered up and she couldn't move it. And here's this woman looking at her hand like it's not her own hand and opening bottles and writing notes with this hand that had been crippled up a few minutes before. So I have seen things like that where someone gets out of a wheelchair and walks and their withered hand is restored to normal just right in front of your eyes.
That's what I was going to ask you. It wasn't withered anymore?
No, it was like a normal hand. She kept holding it out in front of herself, looking at it like, holy mackerel, this isn't my hand. Like, this is somebody else's hand. She couldn't believe her own hand as she looked at it.
Well, see, how in the hell the medical profession would explain something like that?
Oh, they wouldn't. There's no way in the world.
But, you know, they're always saying this is fake or that it's their imagination. They make themselves believe. Well, we know faith and belief is very strong, but still, I don't think that would account for everything.
Well, I'm certain it accounts for some of it. I'm certain
yeah.
You know, that all healing, our own beliefs account for some of it.
Yeah, but I mean, the medical profession wouldn't be able to just shrug it off with
well,
that kind.
Some
you
of
know,
these
I mean, I've heard so many different things about it's like magic and things like that to fool people.
Well, I've experienced the surgery myself. I mean, I'll just explain a little bit about the stuff. He does, for most people, they walk in front of him in a line, and they're told to go sit down or go to have invisible surgery or do this or do that. They're given some kind of instructions.
Yeah.
And the room that he sits in is called the current room, and he tells a lot of people, just sit in my current. That's all you need to do to be healed. Just, you know, sit near me.
His energy field?
Yeah. And the people that sit near him, they're asked to keep their eyes closed. And, you know, and he says, actually, the best thing you can do when sitting near him is go to sleep. Because you know, you just need your mind involved in anything.
And that way you have your conscious mind out of the way.
Yeah. So most people that go in front of him, they get in line. They go in front of him, and he tells them what to do. Now, one of the things he tells people to do is go for surgery. And the surgery is invisible surgery. And invisible surgery means the spirits of the casa, the spirits of the place where he works, do the surgery. And so the people go into what's called a surgery room, which is just a big room with benches in it, and they sit there, and they close their eyes, and he'll come in and start the process. And then when he thinks it's done or when he knows it's done, he'll come in and say, in the name of Jesus Christ, walk, rise and walk, you're all healed. And he'll send them out of the room. And they've had nothing physical done to them.
Mm-hmm.
And yet people will have profound experiences. Like some people will have marks on their body, like a cut, like a stripe of you know, blood coming out of their shirt or something, like they've actually been cut on.
Mm.
Some people will have all kinds of side effects. But they ask people after the invisible surgery to go to their hotel, wherever they're staying, and lie down for 24 hours and don't do any work. Just lay there like you've been, you know, like you've had a real operation in a real hospital.
Well, that's what I do with a lot of my work. Sometimes they get very sleepy afterwards.
Yeah, a lot of people will sleep for 20 hours after this.
They email me later and say, is it normal that I wanted to sleep so much? And I think it's a lot of processing that's going on, too.
A lot of processing goes on. Some people go home and cry for hours. Some people go home and sleep for hours. Some people have, like, one woman whose eyes he worked on had red eyes. I saw her eyes afterwards. They were just tears coming out, and they were all bloodshot. But it was invisible surgery, but she'd asked for healing on her eyes. And after the invisible surgery, it looked like she'd had a real eye operation. I mean, her eyes were really a mess.
Mm. Well, that's what I tell people when they come to see me, and maybe they've driven 8 hours and they want to turn around and drive back, and I tell them it's not a good idea.
No.
Because sometimes they won't even get very far down the road, and they'll have to stop and get a motel because it's just like suddenly they're just so tired and all they want to do is sleep.
Yeah, well, I think that's part of the process of healing. Sometimes you just, you know, the people
maybe
go into that kind of sleep.
Maybe we're tapping into kind of the same thing, just different ways.
Yeah.
But anyway, when he's doing the surgery, it's not like we hear about psychic surgeons.
Well, no, it is. That's the first kind of surgery I'm talking about, the invisible surgery, where people just sit there with their eyes closed and the spirits do the surgery. The second kind of surgery, he does three kinds of surgery. The second kind of surgery I call symbolic surgery, and I just made that name up because he actually does cuts on people with a kitchen knife or a scalpel, but the cuts are nothing known to medicine. Like if a person has high blood pressure, he'll make a little inch-long cut over their heart.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times women, he will cut one breast or the other. He'll make a linear cut in the breast.
Yeah.
And he'll stick his finger in and wiggle it around. Sometimes he'll do what looks like a hernia operation, sort of a cut in the groin. Sometimes he'll bend the person over and make a cut on their back. But these cuts are literal cuts. I mean, he cuts the person open, and then he takes a cotton thread like you'd sew your pants up with, and he puts a couple stitches in it and closes it sort of crudely. And they heal beautifully. They heal almost overnight.
Well, is there blood coming out when he makes the incision?
He can stop bleeding. He can stop and start it at will.
So when he cuts it, there's no blood.
There's no blood flow at all. And some of these cuts are pretty big. And he's asked me to sew them up, so I know they're real cuts. And I've actually, you know, gone up and he said, "Doctor, you sew them up." And he's given me a needle and thread. And one time, this is another long story, but I had given a lecture to the Florida Society of Dermatologic Surgery on difficult closures. And when I left, I had a pretty big head. I had a lot of pride about my talk. And the next day, I ended up in Brazil. And the first thing that happened to me when I went in to see him was he cut a guy open. And he said, "Doctor, come up here and sew this guy up." And so I had been giving this lecture to other dermatologists on how to sew things up, and I thought, boy, I'm hot stuff. He hands me the needle, and I go to put it into the skin, and the skin's as hard as wood. I mean, the needle will not go through, and not only will it not go through, but it breaks when I'm trying to put it through. So I'm embarrassed to death. Long story short, I broke 5 needles. I couldn't get any needles to go through this guy's skin. And so he's looking around sort of amusedly while I'm breaking needles, and I'm sweating and getting more embarrassed. And then finally he says to me, "Now, doctor, I want you to do it like this. I want you to sew with love. I want you to just put as much love into your hands as you can." And the minute I did that, the needle went right through the guy's flesh and sewed him up easily. So he had done this whole thing just to break my pride, just to make me look like a fool, like I couldn't sew in front of hundreds of people. And it worked, obviously.
That's what I was wondering. Do you think he picked up on what you had just been going through?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this whole thing was a lesson to me. At my expense. And it was amusing to everybody else. And even to this day, when I go to town, I hear people talk about the doctor who broke 5 needles, not realizing it's me.
Well, that would show one reason why there wouldn't be any blood if the skin becomes that hard.
Yeah, well, he can do it at will. He can make the skin hard. He can make it soft. He can make bleeding stop. He does sometimes some huge surgeries. Two of the things that are the most impressive to people are one thing we call the nose job, where he takes a hemostat, a great big long, 10-inch long hemostat, shoves it up someone's nose. And you think, when you see this thing go in, you think there's nowhere to go except their brain. I mean, this thing has nowhere to go except in their head.
Yeah.
And wouldn't it kill them or lobotomize them? Well, he did that to me one time. He shoved the thing up my nose. I could feel all these bones crunching in my sinuses where it went, but I never felt any pain at all.
Why did he do it? I mean, do you have something wrong?
I was deaf in my right ear, and I was going deaf in my left ear. I couldn't hear as well in my left ear, and I was terrified I'd be deaf.
Yeah.
And so I told him this, and he said, "Well, come up here for surgery." And he shoved the hemostat up my left nostril, which it was the right ear, but it was the left nostril. And then he took a scalpel and made a cut on my left neck, a big, long, linear cut. And at the time, I had all my faculties. I could think, but I couldn't feel any pain.
Uh-huh.
I was thinking to myself, well, hey, it's my right ear. Do the other side. You're doing the wrong side. Well, anyway, the next day I could hear just fine. And the cut on my neck healed up, so there's no scar at all. I can't even see where it was. And so I learned that this type of surgery that I call symbolic surgery, it works. But, you know, as far as medicine is concerned, we wouldn't have a clue why sticking something up someone's nose would help their hearing.
Yeah,
help anything else for that matter.
You wouldn't think that wouldn't do anything. And it, like you said, it could have gone all the way up to the brain.
Well, he says that it's injecting energy into the person. And it's just a method of putting a lot of energy into the person.
Uh-huh.
And the other surgery that he does, which I, again, call symbolic surgery, is he scrapes people's eyes. And, I mean, he scrapes them. I've been right next to the person holding their head while he's scraping. And I've filmed dozens of these things 6 inches from the eyeball. And you can see the eyeball deflecting, and you can see the epithelium, the skin on the eye, being shaved right off.
Mm.
And the person doesn't feel a thing. And
are they doing that because they're blind or what?
No. This is for stuff like a person comes in and they complain of heart pain, and all of a sudden they're getting eye surgery.
Huh. And it's a different part of the body.
Again, it's an injection of energy into the person. That's what he says is happening. It has nothing to do with their eyes. It's operating on some other part of their body by putting energy in through the eyes.
Hmm.
But it looks brutal and scary, and if you're squeamish, you wouldn't want to watch the movies I made.
But the person doesn't feel anything.
The person doesn't feel a thing. And
no blood or anything.
The corneal reflex is the strongest reflex in the body. If you even get a hair in your eye, you know how bad it feels.
Yeah.
Imagine a kitchen knife scraping the skin off your eyeball.
And there was no reaction.
No, the people just sit there like he's doing nothing to them.
Hmm.
So that's the two kinds of surgery so far. The invisible
surgery.
You know,
that's amazing that he does it on one part of the body to affect another part of the body.
Well, an example, there was a Brazilian physician who was there, and he brought his daughter, and his daughter was up on the stage, and the physician went to go up on the stage with her, and he fell down, and he hit himself on a concrete pile or something that was near the stage. And Jal brought him up real quick on the stage and did the eyeball surgery, the eyeball scraping on him.
Uh-huh.
And the physician asked afterwards, why did you do that to me? And Jal said, because you broke a rib and you ruptured your spleen and you were bleeding internally and I had to stop it.
Oh, he didn't know it yet.
He didn't know it. But sure enough, he went to a hospital in Brasilia and had an x-ray and his rib was broken and his spleen was ruptured. And Jal actually told him, go to the hospital after he did the eye surgery. So the eye surgery was to stop your internal bleeding.
Uh-huh. So he didn't have to have any medical help when he got to the hospital, though.
No, he was okay. But, I mean, if he hadn't had the bleeding stopped, he would have had a horrible time.
Yeah, because, like you said, you're out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
So we
don't understand medically these kind of surgeries. That's why I call them symbolic surgeries.
Uh-huh.
And then he does the third kind of surgery, which is just the kind of stuff that I would do. He cuts people and cuts things out of them and then sews them up. And then sometimes he'll hand them the thing he took out, like he'll cut a breast cancer out of some woman's breast and hand it to her and say, take this home to the pathologist and have him analyze it.
He does
real surgery,
that?
Like that kind of stuff, but rarely. Most of the time it's this invisible surgery. And nobody has to have surgery. People that go there think, oh my God, he's going to cut on me, he's going to scrape my eyes. But he doesn't. He only does that if a person asks for it.
Mm.
So he'll ask, do you want visible surgery? If a person says no thanks, he won't do it.
Well, see, that's what I was thinking about, you know, the stories we've heard about the ones in the Philippines and all that was the psychic surgeons where they cut the person open and they pull something out. And that's where the skeptics have always said, well, it was just magic and, you know, to fool people.
Well,
so that's not the only type of surgery then.
No, he doesn't cut people open with his fingers like the Filipinos do.
Yeah.
And he doesn't produce stuff that looks like chicken guts. I mean, the stuff he takes out is real.
Uh-huh.
I've watched him do it many times, and I've sewn the people up, and I've been graced. He lets me keep my eyes open and film it.
But he trusts you.
Yeah, I guess so. But,
and he wants you to help him, probably.
There was a BBC film crew there one time when I was there, and he sent them home, wouldn't take any pictures. And he let me, with my little camera, go up and stand right next to him and film everything.
Do you know why he wouldn't let the BBC? Why he wouldn't let them do it?
I don't know. I don't know.
I wonder if he thought maybe they were going to do it in a skeptical light or something.
I think, you know, that would be a good answer, but I don't know his reasons.
You know, because maybe, you know, it sounds like he can pick up on a lot of things.
Oh, yeah.
Because, uh-huh. You know, I've done a lot of TV, and I always say, well, you're in the hands of the editor. You know, I mean, the ones who are putting it together, you don't have any way of knowing how it's going to turn out when they're done.
Yeah, he might have sensed that someone was coming to do a send-up of him, make him look bad.
Yeah, and they can do that, too, very easily.
Oh, I'm sure.
And make you look like a fool. Or maybe he thought there was something going on. Hmm. But you said anyway you heard about him, and then you went down there and met him for the first time?
I went down there, and I went because I had a ruptured disc in my neck. And the minute he met me, he said, surgery at 2. So I went to the invisible surgery, sat there in this room. It must have been 100 degrees. You know, you're talking about heat. In Brazil, it's hot.
Ah.
This room had no air conditioning, and we sat there for what seemed like forever, you know, sweating. And then went back to the hotel, and, you know, spent the night in the hotel. I didn't feel anything. I mean, I honestly didn't feel a thing except hot. And
well, before that, had you had pain in your neck?
Yeah, I'd had pain in my neck and numbness in my hand, and, you know, it was really miserable. And it took about 2 months for it to go away after I went home. It didn't go away right away, but it went away. And
was it gradual or what?
Excuse me? Yeah, it was gradual.
Gradual?
It was gradual. And I had an MRI of my neck before I went, and it was the disc, C5, C6 disc was shot. And I had another MRI about a year later, and the disc was back to normal. So it healed itself.
Mm.
But it took time. It wasn't instantaneous.
So is that what made a believer out of you?
That was one of the things. I think one of the things that made a believer out of me is my wife had an enlightenment experience where she saw God and, you know.
Was that after you'd had the surgery in your neck?
Yeah. She was just sitting in the current room and just, you know, hit by a blinding light and emotions and felt like she'd seen God and, you know, felt like she'd had an enlightenment experience. And she was just so overwhelmed by it. That's what turned her into a believer.
Mm.
And we've
that convinced you then that maybe this is real.
Huh? That's what convinced her it was real.
Uh-huh, but did it take a little more to convince you?
Well, I'm more of a skeptic.
That's what I was thinking. You don't just believe it the first time, even though you had yourself healed.
Well, I was most skeptical about the surgeries. I mean, I would see him stick these things up people's noses and cut on people's eyeballs and think, now, how can that be? You know, there must be a secret anesthetic or something that's being delivered here. I mean, how could people tolerate that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
But after, you know, standing right next to me, you know, he had me hold his hand every time he incorporated the entities to do the healing through for 2 weeks. Every time he would go into a trance, he'd have me hold both his hands while he was going into the trance so that I could feel the energy coming into him. And after a while, I'm a dull person, but after a while I could really sense when it was coming and feel it. And then he had me sew people up and stand right next to him while I was doing healings, and has allowed me to film hundreds of hours of surgery. So, you know, over time, it's just impossible to fake this kind of stuff. It's, you know,
that's what made you a believer then?
Yeah, I've just seen too much of it, and I've had it, you know, done to me. So, it's pretty real that what's going on is real. And we've taken so many people who have had healings. This last time we took a guy who had a glioblastoma, a brain cancer. He had an MRI a couple of weeks ago. His cancer is totally gone, not a trace of it. He's been completely cured.
Which kind of surgery did he use on him?
Invisible.
All three or what?
Invisible.
The invisible one.
Right. And there's a guy that lives down there now who married a Brazilian woman, and he was on the 60 Minutes, the TV show that they did about Joe.
Yeah.
He also had a brain cancer, and he's also cured as far as we can tell. So, you know, I met people with incurable diseases like brain cancer. You'd think, well, there's nothing anybody's going to do for them. And they've come home cured. So I've also met people who've gone down there with, let's say, liver cancer, bowel cancer, breast cancer, who've come home and died. So they've not all been cured. But the one thing I can say is that when they're there, they feel great.
Mm-hmm.
When they're there, the symptoms of their cancer go away and their pain goes away. And so,
but does he have an explanation why everyone is not cured?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's any explanation.
I mean, did he ever say anything about why some are not and some are?
I've never heard any explanation from him at all.
Well, he'd never said then.
No, he. Well, see, when you're talking to him, the man, he has no recollection at all of the healing. He's a trance medium. So what happens when he's in a trance, he doesn't remember. Mm-hmm. And when he's in a trance, different entities, different spirits come into him that are, some of them are saints, some of them are doctors, some of them are nameless. And these people come into him and do the healing through him and then leave. And then he'll go into his office after the healings and collapse in a heap. He says that when he's in a trance, it feels like he weighs 500 pounds. It takes all his physical energy away. He looks just exhausted. So if you're going to talk to him and say, well, gee, what happened in there? He'll say, I don't know. I don't remember. I just feel tired.
Yeah.
So if you talk to the man about why someone's not healed, you don't get any explanation.
Yeah, I can understand that now. He wouldn't have any explanation.
And if you talk to the spirit or the entity that's in him, you're lucky if you get any answer at all.
So they don't communicate then?
They sometimes will put on a dialogue, an hour talk. Most of the time, you don't get a word out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that get the hour talk, you're not privy to what they say because he's speaking in Portuguese and he's speaking quietly just to that one person.
Mm-hmm.
And you're sitting, across the room. You don't hear the conversation.
Well, the people he does that to, do they understand Portuguese?
Well, there's a translator there. And most of the time when he does the long talks, it's to a Brazilian who speaks Portuguese.
Uh-huh. Okay, because I was wondering if maybe that doesn't even matter, if you can understand his words or not.
Well, I can understand Portuguese, and when I hear him talking to people, he's usually telling them to go change their lifestyle, stop drinking, stop beating their wife, be more honest in their work. It's usually lifestyle changes he's talking to people about.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes the person will come back and he'll actually... the spirit that's in him will actually be angry, will yell at him. You didn't do what I told you to do, you're still drinking. Or you didn't do what I told you to do, you're still unfaithful to your wife. And,
that sounds like my sessions.
Yeah, he'll scold him. He'll scold him for not mm-hmm. doing what he told him to do. And so there must be some element of that in the healing that he gives people instructions, and if they don't follow the instructions, they don't get well.
Yeah, I've had that happen with people that... what I call the subconscious, the higher self, maybe it's all the same thing. It comes through and it'll tell him, he wasn't telling you the full story. He was lying to you because he hasn't quit drinking. And, we're washing our hands up and we're tired of all of this,
Right.
So it tells the truth about the person.
Right.
So that might be we're touching into the same part, whatever that part is, which we don't know, But, we have miraculous healings, too. But I always think it has to do with the person's own mind and belief system. But,
A lot of times they're healed as long as you're with them, but when they go back to their home environment, the belief of all the people around them is so hopeless that they sort of, it's contagious.
That's a possibility, wouldn't it? If you went back and they said, it couldn't have happened, you were fooled.
Right.
You still have the tumor or whatever it is.
Right. If you're in a negative environment where everybody believes you're sick.
Yeah, they believe you're sick, so you have to become sick again.
Right.
But then that would be a test for your own belief system, wouldn't it?
It would indeed. And that's why I think, spending more time with him is always better for people. People always ask me, well, how long should we spend? Can we get all healed up in a week? And I tell them, well, a week's great, but 2 weeks is better, 3 weeks is even better. The longer you stay, the more it sinks in, the better you do.
Yeah, because, that's what I do in my work. I believe we make ourselves sick. We give ourselves the disease or whatever it is for a reason.
Indeed.
And then we have to find out, why did we do this to ourselves? And once we do, then it goes away. And he's doing it this way, finding out what's wrong with him. But, when our books on Jesus, too, even Jesus couldn't heal everybody.
Right.
And the church never really focuses on that. They always tell everybody that he could heal anybody he come in contact with. But in my work, I found out that Jesus could look at the person, and he could tell why they had the problem, the disease or the ailment or whatever it was. He could tell why they had it and if it was karmic or what. And if it was their karma that they had to have it, he couldn't do anything about it.
Right. I think that's...
He's not allowed to interfere.
Right. And they say that Zhao knows everything about the person when he sees them.
Yeah.
Just at a glance, he knows everything. And so He knows those karmic things, and he tells some people, I just can't heal you, but I'll take away your pain.
Yeah, so I was going to say, Jesus at least took the pain away.
Right. He said, I can't, you know, I'll just make your death more comfortable.
Oh, okay. That's pretty much like what I do, too. I said, can you at least make them comfortable? And they'll say, well, they can take the pain away.
Right.
It's amazing, you know, that we are working with something here science doesn't understand, but it's very real.
Oh, it's real if you're there, and if you tell people, like I've talked to doctors and given them lectures and shown, you know, movies and pictures of him doing his healing. I'd say if you gave a talk to doctors of 100 in a room, 2 or 3 would come up to you afterwards and act like they believed it, or say, I'd like to go see this guy, or
yeah,
maybe there's something to it. 97 out of 100 would shrug their shoulders and say, this guy's been smoking something funny.
Yeah, it has to be some other explanation for it.
Right. Even if they see it with a movie or see, you know, they don't want to believe it.
It has to be faked some way.
It has to be fake, yeah.
Yeah, but you know what, that's when I tell people, there's no amount of evidence for a real skeptic. And then a believer doesn't need any evidence.
Well, there's a statue in the garden of the Casa del Manasio that says, it's a statue of St. Ignatius of Loyola, and it says, for those that believe, no explanation is necessary. For those that don't believe, no explanation is possible.
Mm-hmm. That's good along with the same thing.
Yeah, it's written in Portuguese. But
so, you know, you're wasting your breath in all of the metaphysical work, you know, teachings, trying to convince skeptics.
Right.
That's what I was told. Don't even bother that. When they're ready, they'll be in to ask questions. Until that time, it won't do any good because they're on the defensive.
Right.
But, you know, doctors do have to defend what they've gone to school to learn.
Well, the problem with healers, quote healers, is that everybody wants to be a healer. And so you find, you know, anybody who takes a weekend course on acupuncture or a weekend course on hands-on Reiki therapy or something, they want to set themselves up as a healer. And it's a natural thing. People want to be healers.
But why do they want it?
Do
they want it for ego, or do they want to help people, or what?
I think for both, for ego and wanting to help people. But I think everybody wants to be a healer, and so doctors, medical doctors who have gone to school forever to become certified, look at the people who are wannabe healers as just that, wannabe healers who really don't know what they're doing and aren't doing the right thing. Well, that's kind of conceited. It's kind of, you know, we went to school, so we know the right thing, and you didn't go to school, so you don't know the right thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, a closed guild of healing.
And that's the only way is the way they're taught.
Yeah, and that's right. If they're taught and they spent so much time learning this is the right way, I'd say half the things I learned in medical school, it turned out to be wrong.
Uh-huh.
I remember attending a lecture in medical school where viruses couldn't make reverse transcriptase, and it was impossible. Well, now things like AIDS virus, you know, they're reverse viruses. They make reverse transcriptase. So the whole concept of viruses that could do that, I was taught in medical school, is impossible. And here
mm-hmm.
we have thousands of people dying of impossible diseases now.
Yeah, but, you know, that's the thing. Now that we're making such advances, it's like nothing is impossible anymore.
Right, but doctors are stuck in a way of thinking that if it wasn't learned in medical school, it isn't right.
Uh-huh.
And they poo-poo all the alternative kinds of healers because they didn't learn that in medical school, so therefore it couldn't possibly be right. And it's ridiculous. You know, people get healed every day by mechanisms that we don't understand.
Even their own faith.
Whatever heals people.
Have to go to anybody. If they just, that's what they talk about, the will to live.
Yeah. But I mean, if people understood.
That one woman said, they told her she had 6 months to live, and she said, I don't think so. She could have bought into it, and how many people do? They go home and die because the doctor says they're going to die.
I've seen it many times.
It has to do with belief systems.
Indeed.
No, I'm not ready to. I've got other things I want to do. But then the doctors are always telling him, well, now, you know, I know this is the way the mechanism, the body, the vehicle works.
Most of us don't know what our beliefs are. Our belief system does run us, but most of us have no clue what those beliefs are.
Uh-huh. Maybe that's why that would be a good explanation why you're given the illness, you're given the disease, so you could be put to the test to see what your belief system is.
Well, I'll give you an example. People with asthma that can't breathe, they're very often afraid of dogs.
Afraid of dogs.
And often what's happened is when they're a child, when they're an infant, they've been attacked by a dog, or a big dog's rushed up to them, and it causes them to take a real deep breath and hold it out of fear.
Yeah.
That's locked in them. It's sort of an emotional, locked-in belief that the world's an unsafe place, and it's manifested as, and the proof of it's this big dog just attacked me, and I'm so little.
Uh-huh.
And that belief of the world's an unsafe place will trigger asthma for the rest of their life. But they have no clue, no clue that the belief underlying the difficulty breathing has something to do with the belief in fear of a dog or fear of the world's unsafe place. They don't make that connection in any way whatsoever.
Because it's buried deep in their mind.
Very, very deep. It happened when they were 3 months old or 3 years old. They don't have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the beliefs that run us,
yeah,
things like that happen when we're very, very little. We don't have a clue what the belief
is. Stress, it brings it out.
Yeah, you could bring it out with hypnosis.
Well, you know, I have many, many cases of asthma that I've helped. We found out where it comes from. But I just had my last client yesterday who had some medical problems, and he had no idea where it come from, and we were thinking it was past lives, but when we took him under, the subconscious said it was something that happened when he was 4 years old.
Right.
And he had no memory of that being that young at all. He had no memory of anything that had happened at that time.
Right.
And, well, I'm not naming any names, so I says it's okay to talk about it, but his parents had divorced at that time. And he had always said, well, it didn't bother me any, because I don't remember anything that happened at that time. But he said his grandmother came to visit him a few years ago, and he was talking to her, and he says, well, you know, I turned out pretty good. I didn't have any effects from the divorce. She said, oh, yes, you did. You were hiding in the closet every day crying. And he had no memory of that.
Right.
So the subconscious said that was what was causing his physical problems. He felt he was responsible for the parents breaking up. And, you know, a child doesn't know any different, and they're not responsible. But that's the logic of a child, and it carried over with him no memory, no conscious memory at all, that was what was causing the problem now.
Right.
So a lot of these things are very, very deep.
But that's the way beliefs are. We think beliefs cause illness, and we tell people, well, change your belief. But the person has no idea what their belief is unless they come across someone like you that can hypnotize them, or they can have some kind of a deep recognition of the belief.
Yeah, if they went in meditation, some way to find it. But would they believe it or not? But that's the thing, you know, it's to let it go. You know, you're not responsible. It happened to a child. You had nothing to feel like that about it, and that's one of the reasons why the diseases go away then. He was punishing himself.
Right. I think one of the things about John of God is that there's such tremendous faith around him. When you go there, you're struck with the people that volunteer. There's, you know, dozens of people who've given up their jobs and lives. Some of them are doctors, some are lawyers, some, you know, important people in Brazil, and they've given up their lives just to volunteer to help people in the clinic. And you see the absolute faith of the people, and they're praying, and they're down on their knees, or they're meditating for hours, and I think it's a community effort, a community spirit, a community energy. And as they say, he calls it kohinche, which means current. Sitting in his current, or in the current room, when you put 100 people together meditating and praying with a healer for hours in a room, a lot of things happen. You know, a lot of shifts happen in people that are really powerful, just that faith creates a new belief system, and they may not get understanding what their beliefs are, but they have a new belief system now of faith, and I think that helps to heal them.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You get that many people together with that kind of loving energy, it's going to perform miracles anyway.
Yeah, it's a real environment for miracles.
The accumulation of the energy.
Right.
And you know it's going to have some kind of an effect.
And John of God calls his place a spiritual hospital. He says there are hundreds, if not thousands, of spirits that are here attending, helping out,
uh-huh.
So that it's not just his energy or the people's energy in the room. There's, you know, spirits that want to help out come there and help.
Mm-hmm. And you said you built a house down there so you could go down there about once a month or so?
Well, I go down about three times a year. My wife goes all the time. She's there right now, and she takes people that want to go there. She makes all the arrangements and takes them there.
And people from the States?
People from the States, people from England, Australia, wherever they want. She has a website that people can look her up on and email her and stuff.
Yeah, why don't you give that out? I think that's important.
It's touch-star. The word touch, T-O-U-C-H, the hyphen, and then the next word star, S-T-A-R, .com.
And you can find out from her then how to make arrangements to go down there to see John of God.
Yeah, well, I'll give you her email, too.
Okay, because, you know, a lot of people say, well, yeah, I'd like to go, but how do I get there?
She makes it really simple. Her email is heartinbliss, all one word, heart, H-E-A-R-T, in bliss, all one word, heartinbliss at yahoo.com.
Part of bliss?
Part in bliss.
That's just the letter N?
I-N.
I-N, heart in
heart,
bliss.
Heart in, like three words, heart in bliss, but just written all together.
I thought you were saying and in there.
Heart,
so it's heart, H-E-A-R-T.
I-N-B-L-I-S-S. Heart in bliss.
That's her email.
At yahoo.com. And she's in Brazil right now. I just got an email from her a minute ago.
Yeah, she said, we got an email from you saying you wanted to know what website this was going out on
so she
could hear us.
She was trying to find an internet cafe in Brazil where she could go hear us.
I hope she's able to find it.
I hope so. She was on the internet writing me saying, you know, what time's the show?
Uh-huh. I think that's extremely important because people out there listening, you know, they want to do this, and they know there's lots of faith healers, but they don't know how to get down there.
Well, she makes it easy. She makes the plane reservations, picks them up at the airport, takes them hand in hand to see John of God, you know, gets the hotel, does everything. It's people don't have to do a thing. They get off the plane, and they're taken care of.
Oh, I think that's wonderful. You're doing a great service.
Well, it's a selfish service. We love to be there, and we love to be in his presence, and we love to see the people. I take pictures of people the day they get there, and I take pictures of them the day they leave, and you wouldn't believe the difference in their eyes. It's like there's a light in the eyes that wasn't there when they get there. And I tell people when I come home, the worst culture shock isn't going to Brazil. The worst culture shock is coming home and seeing the deadness in the people's eyes and faces in the airport.
Back to civilization,
back
quote
to civilization.
Unquote.
But the people in the Casa, the people around John of God, they light up with a new life. You know, it's you can just see the energy flowing in their bodies and in their eyes.
Mm. So I'm writing this down. It's touch-star.
Right, .com.
.com, S-T-A-R. Touch-star.com is the website.
Right.
And if they want to get hold of your wife, it's touch heart in bliss.
Heart in bliss, all one word, at yahoo.com.
Yahoo.
And they can also go to the website and connect with her on the internet, on the
Yahoo.com. But what is your wife's name in case they want to contact her?
Catalina Ely.
Catalina.
Yeah, like the island of Catalina.
C-A-N-T?
C-A-T-A-L-I-N-A, Catalina.
Catalina, okay.
Kathleen in Spanish.
C-A-N-T-A-T-I-L-A.
Catalina, C-A-T-A-L-I-N-A.
Okay, I had too many T's. All right, I want to write this down and put it in my Rolodex because it's Catalina Ely.
Right.
Yeah, in case people start emailing me and want to have more information about it. You won't believe it, Haynes. I'm looking out my window while we're talking. There's four deer looking right in my window at me and two little babies.
Oh, how nice. Fawns.
I wonder if they're being drawn to the energy or what, but they're all around the house this time of night. I just had to say that. It's so beautiful.
You know what deer love? We just discovered this. Catalina chopped up a watermelon rind and tossed it out in our yard.
Yeah.
And there were deer all over it. They just think it's candy. I never would have thought deer would like watermelon rind.
Well, I'm so far out in the mountains, I throw my garbage outside all the time, and it's probably what attracts them.
Yeah.
They love it, you know, and the raccoons like it, too.
And they probably love your energy, too.
Oh, yeah, because it's so peaceful here. Because, you know, I travel everywhere, and I have to come back here to recharge my batteries. But I'm going to put this on my Rolodex, too, and if anyone wants to contact me to find out about this, I think this is a valuable service that you're doing by helping people to get down there. Because, you just can't go to a travel agent and say, I want to go down there.
No, it's a lot of hops to get there, but she makes it so easy. She either rents a bus or a taxi or, whatever it takes to however many people come, and has them right there at the airport. And it's all, all done. Nobody has to even look around for how to get there.
That's wonderful. And then you're running your practice there in Grass Valley.
Oh, yeah.
You can't go all the time.
No, I can't go as often as I'd like. I've got a daughter in college, too. I got to stay here and work.
Okay. But I know you said you did build a house down there, so you...
Oh, yeah.
You
I go as often
keep
as I
going
can.
Back.
I go as often as I can. I love to go on the trips, see people.
See, yeah, I'm watching the clock because I'm supposed to stop about 5 till. But one more question.
Anything.
Does John of God doesn't, he's not paid for his services or anything,
oh, no,
is he?
No, absolutely not. He says if he charges anything, God will take away his powers of healing.
That's what I was wondering, because some people say, he's probably making lots of money doing this.
No, he won't charge a thing. He's independently wealthy. He's a businessman. He has a gold mine, an emerald mine, a huge ranch in a town near Abidjania. He used to have a car dealership. I mean, he's very, very wealthy.
A long cry from the 16-year-old didn't have anything.
Well, actually, the spirits told him to buy a piece of land, and he begged, borrowed, and stole for years to get the money down payment for the land.
Yeah.
And when he got the land, he discovered emeralds on it. He has a fabulous emerald mine. That was the source of his wealth.
Uh-huh.
Spirits told him to buy this worthless piece of land that nobody wanted.
So they've given him personal advice, too, then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and basically he says, I do this healing for free, and I've got plenty of money, from my own stuff, so he doesn't accept anything.
Well, I think that should be one strike against the skeptics who say, he's doing this to make money.
No, he doesn't make a dime.
Like I say,
the people that work with him are all volunteers.
But I think this is wonderful, and you're really the bat. He's telling me we have to stop.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, great talking to you, Dolores.
All right, and I'll be in touch with you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you a lot for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.